Kind of hazy, humid thing out there. 70 degrees at KRNT. And Ray Dennis has joined me this morning. Ray's going to be in here next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday doing the first part of the week while I'm on vacation. And then Calvin Bierman will be in here for Thursday and Friday. And Ray has brought along his love of the early days of radio. And Ray, why don't you tell them about a book and an author that you're going to be talking to this morning here on KRNT.
Yeah, the reason I'm here is I was going to be on today. Actually, things got moved back a week, and Steve said, well, if you got that interview lined up, come on down. So on the line right now, I've got Dr. Jeff Stein.
He's a doctor
at Wartburg College. And there's a book. It's right in front of me here right now. It's actually a coffee table type format. Beautiful book with pictures and stories and CD-ROM with it called Making Waves. You there, Jeff?
I am. Good morning. Thanks for having me on KRNT this morning.
Doctor.
Yeah. I'll be prescribing medication for you, Steve, after the show.
Actually, I heard your doctorate's in law. Is that correct?
Yes, I practice law as I also worked in radio and television and started my teaching career. So I still do a little of that, but focus now mostly on teaching radio and television to the next generation.
Huh, you lowered your expectations, huh?
Oh, now. The bar is set high because if they're going to in any way come near, you know, the greatness that is Steve Gibbons, they are going to need to work hard.
You're more than kind.
Well, we try.
Wait a minute, let me get the smoke out of here. Okay, I'm sorry.
I've been hearing about this book for a couple years,
yeah.
And finally, the book came out. And how did this all start? What drove you to do this?
Well, I've loved radio and television since I was young and wound up working in the field, as I noted, for a time, and now I teach it. And about a decade ago, up at Wartburg College, a legendary broadcaster in eastern Iowa by the name of Grant Price started the Broadcasting Oral History Project, interviewing people on the air and behind the scenes who were important in Iowa broadcasting so that we would have those stories, have those recollections for posterity. And I joined the faculty at Wartburg about 6 years ago, and we started collecting tapes and photos and memorabilia, and as we like to say, things just got out of hand from there. And we have started an entity called the Archives of Iowa Broadcasting, which is a research and display facility so that folks can come and take a look at some of the wonderful artifacts that have been collected over the years. But it's also a research facility, and so a publisher in Cedar Rapids happened to be on campus for another project, saw the display, and said, you know, this might make a pretty good book. And at first I kind of deferred because I didn't think we had enough material, but as I started looking into it, we had more than enough. And the problem was deciding what to leave in and what had to go on the cutting room floor. So a couple of years ago we started talking about it, and the product was released just 3 weeks ago in Central Iowa.
Well, I know you did a lot of interviews because I kept hearing from people that I've got a little project going with a website, and I kept bumping into the same people, and they said, well, we're talking to Jeff Stein this week, you know, that type of thing.
Sure.
How long did it take to put the whole thing together, and could you maybe give us some of the interesting things that you might have uncovered that you didn't know that popped up as a result of some of these interviews?
Well, I had a good head start because as all of the interviews were being done, I did some, Grant Price did some, et cetera. We collected tapes from folks who had already done interviews with those who unfortunately were no longer with us. So I knew the collection as it was growing, and so that gave me a head start. We've got more than 100 video cassettes of famous people and some not so famous, but they were very important in putting stations on the air. From the time I started working on the book till it finally came out was about 2 years. A lot of that was spent finding just the right photo, etc. And I'm an amateur historian. As you noted, my training is in journalism and law, but I was really happy that we were able to nail down a couple of firsts. And one of the things that I had not realized, and we were able to document for the first time, was that the first live from the field high school football play-by-play was done in Marshalltown, Iowa in 1922. Nobody in America had done a game from the field. And it really didn't strike the people who put the game on the air as being odd because the ball field, the stadium, was at 13th and Main. The station was at 16th and Main. and there was nothing in between but a gravel road and a couple of pastures, so they just simply ran a line. It was that kind of spark and ingenuity that I think really is the hallmark of Iowa broadcasting, and you see that same pioneer spirit go from the earliest days to today, and that's one of the themes, I think, that runs through the book Making Waves.
I'm kind of thumbing through the book here right now, and I tell you, it's worth it for the pictures, even if you couldn't read, you know, which is just, it's really great.
And as the one who wrote the words, I really am glad that we were reaching a broad audience, some who might want to color the black and white photos. Perhaps,
sure, well. Sure. Well, I've been working on that, too.
Hey, don't make fun of that, because that's a job I had at WHO-TV when
right.
I first started. They used to give me these pastel colors when they were starting to go color.
Right.
Back in when WHO was changing from black and white to color television, they gave me a box of pastel colors and these pictures that would come off of the wire service, and they'd say, you know, tint these pictures in. So I'd be sitting there and I'd make the trees get a green and the cars kind of blue or whatever, you know, people, you know, I'd be doing the thing there. So that was an early job I had, is coloring in the pictures.
Well, that's still an important job today. We talk about courtroom sketches, you know, for we've been so used to cameras in the courtroom, but now with some of these high profile cases, they're not allowing camera coverage, and so folks around the country have had to scramble to find courtroom artists. So you know, you may still be able to fall back on coloring in black and white photos.
If they don't care, as long as they don't mind if they look like stick people, that's okay.
We're just conveying the image, so that's okay.
Jeff, I've got a favorite picture,
yes,
being
sir.
Born and raised here in Des Moines and being here when the TV stations came on the air. There's a picture in here of the famous KRNT TV Russ Van Dyke weather map. And
yeah.
We always thought Russ was left-handed, and we couldn't figure out how in the world he could be behind that glass and have that map be backwards and be so good, be able to write on it and have the writing come out right. And this picture tells it all. It shows how it's done. The map was actually backwards, so Russ was behind the map so he could see it the right way, so the country was the right way, he could write right on it. And then they flip-flopped the picture.
There was a switch on the camera that you could flip, and it would invert the image, create a mirror image. And on the cover of the book, we've got a photo of what the audience saw. And then inside, and I really struggle with this, frankly, because it's kind of like that Santa Claus Easter Bunny discussion.
Mm.
You know, you want to be a little careful, but it was such a great photo that showed exactly how it was done. They had a problem when KRNT-TV went to color, however.
That's what I was going to say.
They didn't have the same switch.
Yeah.
And so they had to then use a mirror and bounce images off.
They had to shoot into the mirror.
Uh-huh.
And there were marks on the floor, and it had to be exactly right, because if it was off a little bit, you'd be looking right into the, you know, hallway instead of Russ.
Well, another thing, getting into the words, I can read, so I was doing that, too, reading some of the stories.
You didn't tell me you could read. Damon, am I the only one here that can't read?
I noticed that, and particularly with the TV stations, that actually Channel 8 and Channel 13, two of our local commercial channels here, could have had different occupants.
There was a fight for the licenses. KRNT Radio and KSO Radio both applied for the Channel 8 frequency. And WHO and KIOA Radio applied for Channel 13. And when you see how important television became to the whole companies, of course, now everybody's fragmented and split, but I've always wondered what would have happened had, for example, KIOA gotten the license to Channel 13 or KSO gotten the license to Channel 8. And again, when you start looking from a historical irony standpoint, KRNT and KSO had been owned by the Register jointly in the same building, and for them then 20 years later to wind up being in a death lock to try to get the license for Des Moines Channel 8 just shows that the business has been competitive from day one. They settled those before going to the FCC, but up in Waterloo, two stations fought in federal court. And it's a wonderful story of a bit of skullduggery, a bit of illegal trading among advertisers, some secret recordings that were revealed in court, real cloak and dagger kind of stuff.
Well, the other thing, too, and I do remember this having been born and raised here, 8 and 13 really weren't the first local channels. Of course, we had Channel 5 from Ames serving both markets, but it was actually Channel 17 in Des Moines originally, wasn't it?
That's That's right. Channel 17 went on the air in the UHF band. Mm-hmm. It was only on for a little less than a year because of the fact it was on that UHF band, which was very hard for people to pull in. And because of cable television today, it doesn't really matter whether you're on UHF or VHF. You get onto the cable and 80 to 85% of the people can see you. But it's one of those little nuggets that very few people have known. You know, those who lived through it or those who are historians know it, but the first station in Des Moines was on the air for less than a year, Channel 17, as you noted.
And that tower out north of town where they were, which is where State Police Radio is, mm-hmm. was actually an old WHO tower that was moved from Mitchellville. Mm. We used to call it the upside down tower mm-hmm. because they took the top part off and it looked like it was setting on the point. But it was actually a diamond-shaped tower.
Is but they didn't use the whole thing. Yeah.
And the first television station in Iowa was actually at the University of Iowa in the 1930s. They did some experimentation with the mechanical scanning, and simulcast the audio on the university radio station. But, of course, that was just not a technology that was going to live, and so the electrical scanning took over. But there are all these little things that you think you know, but it was gratifying to be able to kind of nail it down and talk to the people who were there. That was one of the really gratifying things. The people who were there doing the things, telling the stories, and those are the ones that really have come forth in the book.
Yeah, I just really appreciate the work you put in on this and all the hours that you and your staff put in here. And just a fantastic walk through memory lane for me, because tell you the truth, I'm starting to forget some of these.
You know, we still have the tape of the interview we did, Steve, if you'd like to remember what you said. I could send you
burn it. Burn that tape.
The goal of it was not to be, and it's interesting you said that, the goal was not to be the history, because that would take volumes, clearly. But it was simply a way to tell some of the stories of some of the people. And I'm hoping that if for some reason somebody reads a story about a guy in Spencer who walked 20-some miles to raise money for the March of Dimes, they may know nothing about Spencer, but it might call to mind someone from their recollection in their hometown, because a lot of the experiences were similar. So I'm really hoping it's the starting point for memories as opposed to the be-all and end-all collection, because there's so many great people that just space did not allow us to be able to manage.
Oh, Ray and I were talking about it. You need to have a volume two.
Well, I've been asked, and in fact, one of my students here at Wartburg, even before the book came out, it was coming out that week, and she said, "Are you going to write another book?" And I thought, I haven't even seen the first one yet. So let's hold on here. But, you know, there's plenty of material, and if this is well received, I would love to keep telling some of these stories. And one of the chapters that folks really seem to go toward is the one on TV kids shows.
Oh, yeah.
Because those struck such a chord with so many of us.
Sure.
It's what I call the awe factor. People kind of browse through and they stop and they go, "Oh, there, I remember that one." And that's one that you have those memories the rest of your life.
Yep, you really do.
Jeff, let's tell them what this is all about here,
yes.
What happens tomorrow, where you're going to be, where they can get the book, where it can be signed, and let's see, you're going to be out at Borders in West Des Moines tomorrow, right?
Yes, we'll be at Borders in West Des Moines tomorrow, Saturday, from 2 until 4.
With Dick Youngs.
Dick Youngs has agreed to come out there starting at 2. He, of course, has to come to work a little later in the day, but I was very happy that Youngsy could join me for this. We're trying to do that at the book signings around the state, is to invite some folks from the field to come and meet the public as well, and that's been very well received. So starting at 2 o'clock tomorrow at Borders in West Des Moines, the book is available at Borders now. It's available at the Borders in Ames. It's also available at the State Historical Society Museum building there in Des Moines at the bookshop. And, of course, regular places like Amazon.com and all of that. And the publisher even has a toll-free number, which is 800-626-0411. 800-626-0411.
Well, I think we better give Steve's show back to him here. So,
No, okay, this is. I love this. I love this. You're talking about the kids shows. When I worked over at HOTV, one of the jobs I had during the week with the guys who worked over there, we had to fill the floppy sacks.
Oh.
Because when kids and their moms came into the floppy show, they would get a floppy sack, and in there would be a bottle of Mountain Dew. And there'd be a sack of Highland potato chips.
Oh, yeah. Very nourishing food.
Yes, there'd be Archway cookies, which for some reason always ran out before the end of the month. I don't know where those cookies went, but we had to put all those in there. And then we had Colonial bread pencils and all this stuff. And these sacks had to be sitting there and ready to go because they'd open the door and these 22 or 25 kids and their moms and grandma and everybody come running in the studio to sit in this peanut gallery and talk to Floppy and Dwayne Ellett and... So we had to have those floppy sacks ready to go.
The name of the book is Making Waves, and you can get it at all those places that Jeff mentioned, signing tomorrow out at the Borders from 2 to 4. Jeff, thanks a lot. We've really enjoyed this.
Well, thank you, and I know it's Steve's show, but I'm wondering if Steve would tell one of the stories that's in the book. Of
No,
it's a good story. It's a good story because an engineer up here told me the other day he used to do the same thing with the fluorescent light bulb. Do you remember that story? To impress your friends?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I remember the exact story, but when you're working at the transmitter site, is that what you're talking about?
Yes, when you're working
at the transmitter site, you can take a fluorescent bulb and hold it in your hand like a lightsaber, like they used in Star Wars, and you can hold it in the building and walk around close to the transmitter, and there's enough RF coming off of the transmitter to light up the bulb. And is that the one you're talking about?
That's the one.
Yeah, yeah. So people would come in, and that was 100 years before we ever heard of Star Wars, and we had these lightsabers, and you could just use a long bulb. But another story you told made me think of Chuck Hamilton and his family when they owned KBAB in Indianola.
Yes.
They did the Indianola, it was called the Redmond then, and I think they're called the Storm now. But anyway, they did the Indianola High School basketball football team. And the football field was close to the KBAB studios out on Highway 92. And we didn't have an antenna or any kind of a sending unit or receiving unit. So we ran wire along a farmer's fence from the ball field.
You know, Chuck told me they actually used part of the fence.
And they used the fence.
Yeah, part of the wiring.
They ran out of wire, so they just pigtailed it into this guy's farmer's fence.
He said there was a little hum on the signal, but it worked pretty well.
And then at the other end, when they ran out of fence, they found some more wire and pigtailed it in, and back they went through the door, back door of the studio, and into the board. And there we did the game, the high school football game on KBAB using part of farmer's fence.
Well, and that's the whole thing of it. I mean, we did what we had to do to get the thing on the air for the public, and that's what I just think folks don't have an appreciation, or they have no way of knowing because we don't like to make a big deal about it. But I think it's time that people like that got their due for what they've done to make this radio and television what it has become.
Yeah. We were afraid that a cow might have a urge to purge on the fence and short us out there if any moisture hit that wire. But anyway, I'm getting in your interview here. I'm sorry, but this stuff's so much fun.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. We really appreciated taking your time this morning. I imagine you need to get over to the school.
Yep.
Well, we do have those grades that are due, but I'm so grateful for all that you've both done to help me with this and for the time this morning. Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That was neat, Ray.
Yeah,
that was
sure
neat.
Was.
And Dr. Jeff will be at Borders tomorrow?
Right, 2 to 4.
From 2 to 4 o'clock. And he's going to have the old youngster out there?
Right.
All right. That'll be a good time. That'll be a good time. Wish I was going to be in town so I could stop by and harass him a little bit. All right. But that's a definite must-have if you enjoy the early days in Iowa, especially with the pictures in the book.
And the CD-ROM.
Oh,
we didn't mention that.
Yeah.
Well, put it in the computer and you get all this stuff. Oh, it's neat.
Oh, wow. You can have a Dick Young screensaver. Of course, he was at East High and he was 19 years old. He looks like, Superman, but that's okay. You ever seen pictures of him when he played football?
Yeah.
Ooh. 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 I can remember, he was a couple of years ahead of me at East and I was at North, but I can remember watching him and he was an impressive Hulk on there when he had on the East Side colors looking out at you. 7:54, good morning, 6 minutes away from 8 o'clock. We're doing a little reminiscing here, and Ray Dennis has joined me. Ray's going to be in here next week for me while I'm on vacation. So, good interview with the doctor. And What do we do next? Well, let's check traffic. We haven't done that for a while. Let Mary talk for a while. You know, I've talked too long. All right.
This report is a service of the Iowa Department of Transportation. You're looking at a good ride.